Hello, I am Pete Real, a high school English and Spanish teacher, an avid reader, and an aspiring writer. Thank you for listening to the Chills at Will podcast, in which we explore the visceral beauty of literature and its connection to our culture, our history, and ourselves. Hello and welcome. This is episode 103 of the Chills at Will podcast. It's a pleasure today to be joined by Tracy Thompson. And here's a little bit about Tracy. California Reading is written by Tracy Thompson. Tracy is a British expat living in Southern California with her daughter, husband, and books. Her daughter is named after her favorite Shirley Jackson character. Can you guess which one it is? I'm going to try to guess in a minute.
Okay.
In her 20-year writing career, Tracy has written for various music magazines and theater websites, but now prefers more sedate pleasures and looser deadlines. Since April 2018, Tracy has read a short story, in parentheses, almost, has read a short story almost every day. She's read a short story every day. You can follow her ever-growing list at, and I will post this on the notes, https://california-reading.com/california-reading.com. And this is Tracy's short story journey. I was drawn to this, Tracy, just by how cool that is. I'm a short story fanatic. First of all, how are you today?
I'm good. Thank you very much. It's Monday. So as good as you can be on a Monday, I guess.
There you go. Right. Yeah. Such a pleasure to talk to you. I'm so interested in the short story quest. How did it all begin? Meaning when you were growing up in England, am I correct?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
What were you reading? What were you interested in? Were you into sci-fi? Were you into fantasy? Were you into historical fiction? What was your relationship with language and literature when you were a kid?
Well, I remember, it's funny. I remember the very first short story I heard, and I remember where I was. I was in, I guess you guys call it elementary school, but I must have been around 8 or 9 years old. And the principal of our school, for some reason, brought us all together for an assembly. And he read a short story by a British author, Roald Dahl, called The Hitchhiker, which okay. I don't know if you're familiar with this one. The basic premise of it is it's a tales of the unexpected kind of thing. A guy... he has this really fast car, he's driving too fast, and he picks up a hitchhiker, and they get to talking, and he says he's I think a fingersmith or something, and he can do magic things with his hands. And then this guy gets pulled over by the police, and let's just say details unravel, and the fingersmith hitchhiker that he picks up saves this guy from getting arrested with his quick movements around the police officer and taking away his notepad and stuff. Spoilers. Oh. But I remember hearing that story, and I don't know how age appropriate it was, but at the time just thinking, oh, wow. And then I read some more Roald Dahl, his kind of books for younger readers, like Matilda, which is incredibly popular, George's Marvelous Medicine, and stuff like that. I just love, and he's probably a little problematic for 2022 in some regards, but the kind of basis of his stories is just, he's just crazy. He is just wacky and out there, and all the names and stuff that he makes up for things. As a little kid, it was just gold dust for me to find this author who is consistently crazy. And there's some great stuff in his stories, like Matilda, in terms of a young lady being empowered through reading, was something I could totally relate to at such a young age.
Oh, that's so cool. I love the idea of like remembering where you were when you heard that. That's so cool.
It's strange because a lot of my childhood is kind of a blur, but I remember the important stuff, and that is one memory that really sticks out for some reason.
Well, James and the Giant Peach, right?
Yes, he wrote that too. Yes, absolutely.
Okay. And describing The Hitchhiker, I'm like, maybe I did read it. I would need to go back and reread it, but it sounds kind of familiar. Was this one of those where like, I don't know, think of like Shel Silverstein. Are you familiar with Shel Silverstein?
Kind of, yeah. He wasn't too big in the UK, but yeah, The Giving Tree, and I'm familiar with that. Yeah.
You know, but like I was always surprised. I was surprised when I got older to find out like he wrote for older people.
Yeah, I think he did plays and stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think he even wrote for Playboy, whatever that means.
Oh, there we go.
Right. You know, but like same with Roald Dahl, that's interesting that you read him first. You read like his older stuff, you know, stuff for older people, and then got into Matilda. Like I said, who knows how age appropriate it was.
Yeah, I know. And I don't know why his name was Mr. Kane. He was a crazy. Well, he wasn't crazy. He was a unique guy. But yeah, I thank him, you know, however many years later for him doing that. And it stayed right in the memory there. They made it for TV too. They had a TV show of Tales of the Unexpected.
Okay.
So I think it's on YouTube, and it's a really short story. So it fits quite well into a 30-minute kind of TV show.
Does it have like an O. Henry type of ending?
It's an unexpected ending. Very right. kind of,
I appreciate you protecting the spoilers. Okay. All right.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's really, I would really recommend it. It's very short and it's very entertaining, but I recommend most of Roald Dahl's work. I think he's a great author for both kids and adults.
Excellent. I wonder then what else were you reading once you're off to the races with Roald Dahl? You know, did you read more of his work, all of his work? Did you read same genre? What else as you got a little bit older, what were you transfixed by?
I kind of had a mix of stuff. I don't remember too much. The things that stand out are kind of Roald Dahl, another British author called Enid Blyton. She kind of wrote like The Famous Five. The series that I remember reading is one set in like a British girls' boarding school called Mallory Towers. And it's just, you know, child safe hijinks of British teenagers in the early 20th century. Just safe stuff. And then there was a time when I was a teenager where I thought I was too cool for school and I didn't do too much reading at all. And then when I was in college, I kind of got back to it a little, because I figured I wasn't cool, so I could go back to reading. And yeah, and that's when I really started consuming novels at an alarming rate up until whatever age I am now.
Sure. I like the ebb and flow of like what was cool and what wasn't cool, right? Like,
yeah, actually, you know especially how teenagers are. It's not through lack of access. I mean, I always had like libraries and stuff. My school had a library. I've always lived near libraries. Mm-hmm. I had some great English teachers in high school, and they recommended things to me then that I didn't really catch on to, but I think they knew, like, one English teacher, Leslie Whitefield, she recommended Angela Carter's The Bloody Chamber to me when I was, gosh, around 17. And at the time, I'm like, I don't get this. And I read it, you know, 15 years later, and I'm like, oh, she knew what she was giving me to read. She knew what she was doing. And then writers like Ursula Le Guin, Susan Hill, a lot of great writers that, you know, I stored and then came back to when I was a little older so I could fully appreciate them.
I love that idea again of like, you know, you discover it when you discover it, right? You get the most out of it when you get the most out of it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you come to books at a time in your life for a reason. And even if, you know, there are books that I pick up and put down and think, you know, I don't want to read this now, but I'll probably read it later when I'm physically in the mind space.
Right. And I'm sure you, I mean, I know I read differently as a parent too, right?
Oh yeah, when I can, mostly.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, when I was in my 20s, I remember going through a phase of reading books about children being kidnapped. Ooh. And I don't know why I could not do that now. It would give me nightmares.
Right, totally.
Yeah, quality comes into it now because I'm a parent and I only have so much little reading time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting a little bit more discerning about the things that I do invest my time in, and okay. I don't feel bad about leaving a book unfinished anymore. I used to.
The guilt that comes with that, right? I
don't know. Yes.
So you're a major master reader. You're also, you know, a great writer. You did writing for a living. You wrote about music. You wrote about theater. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. Well, I when I went to college in the UK, I studied journalism. And while I was there, I did an internship at a music magazine in London called Big Cheese. I don't think they're around anymore, but it was a fantastic opportunity for me as a as a person in the early 20s, I got to speak to lots of different bands. I spoke to Fall Out Boy, My Chemical Romance, Goo Goo Dolls, lots of really cool people. And I didn't buy any CDs. Remember those? I didn't buy any CDs for the longest time. I got to go to all the coolest shows, and I wrote about what I was passionate about. And this was a time before social media was really big. I don't think I would want to do it now because everyone has an opinion and everyone can share it very easily.
Yes.
So I'm not good with criticism of my writing. So I think if I did it now, I would be, yeah, I don't have thick enough skin for that. But yeah, after that, I got very involved with my local theatre scene when I lived in Manchester, not as an actor, but as somebody who just enjoys watching plays. And I worked for a couple of websites and did reviews of big shows and little shows. There's a really, well, the, I don't know if it is anymore, but there's a really good little theatre community in Manchester. We've got some really big spaces where like Broadway shows can come touring, but then there are also literally rooms above a pub where you could fit 10 people and a stage and they can do, they did that. One was an adaptation of Blade Runner that they did with like 8 people in a little room.
What?
Saw some really, really great stuff. So yeah, I did a lot of reviewing of that. And then I moved to the United States 7 years ago, 7 or 8 years ago.
Okay.
And my world got turned upside down. And yeah, I just stopped doing that. I just switched my focus to reading because it's easier. The books are right there. I don't have to go to a theater. I don't have to go to a show.
Those shows didn't sound too COVID friendly in these days, right?
I haven't been to the theater for years, and I don't know when I can ever go again safely.
Isn't that sad? Yeah, I know.
It really is. It really is. And like I, you know, we have to wear masks and stuff, but I don't like having anything on my face. Right. And I'm a smiler, so like I look at people on the street and I smile at them. So now it just looks like I'm staring at them, and I'm weird.
Yeah, a lot of the writers, you know, they describe smiling with the eyes, and I'm like,
exactly.
I kind of get that, but it's like it's hard to fully commit to that. Yeah,
and I wear glasses, so you can't always see
right. Reflections and stuff. Did you feel like it took a lot for you to? I mean, attack is a strong word. Did you feel like it took a lot for you when you're writing about music and theater to like, you know, give it a negative review? Was it somewhere like they had to be horrific in order for you to, like would you not do a review at all, or would you do like a slightly, you know, lukewarm review?
It's funny that you say that, because one of the sites that I wrote for was called The Good Review, and their kind of selling point is they only posted good reviews. Okay. And if they sent someone to a show and the reviewer didn't like it, then there would be a dialogue with the theater company, all the actors, whoever, about like, these are my opinions. Here's how I, as somebody who sees a lot of shows for a living, here's how I think you could possibly improve it. And there was a lot of kind of, some people didn't like that. They're like, oh, what's the point if you like everything? And it's like, well, go to a different website. You know, there's a lot of them. But yeah, I think especially in art, when people are, they're putting so much energy into making something, you don't want to be the person to tear it down on a public forum. And it's there is only so much value in that. And I can't remember who said it once, but a good review should consist of two things. Like, what's it about? And is it any good? And I think that's enough. And if you can do that without telling someone that they've wasted a significant portion of their life creating art because one person doesn't like it, I don't want to be that person.
Right. Like subjective, and it's person could have like a and too much power, if you will, too much influence.
That's it. Yeah, absolutely.
Did you ever like, I don't know if it's a great comparison, like, you know, someone works at McDonald's all day, and then, you know, you might like McDonald's, but by the end of the day you're like, So like when you were doing reviews, did you find it hard to like sit back and just enjoy the music or the theater? You know what I mean? Or were you always thinking like, oh, I'm gonna write this, I'm gonna write that?
Yeah, I tried not to be the person with the notepad. And it's funny, I do that when I'm reading still. It's difficult to break out of that mindset. Uh-huh. Like, I like this part. How am I gonna convey that in writing?
Yeah.
So there were, I mean, I did go to the theater for pleasure too. So there was that distinction of shows I go see for fun and shows I see for work. And it's easier even with books too. It's easier when you see or read something you enjoy and you're passionate about. It's easier to review that, or even if something's terrible, not that I'd want to tear something down, but it's when you kind of, you're kind of, eh, it's like, it's difficult to write a review of something that's just okay.
Right. I don't know if there's like a continuum between like sufferable and insufferable, but like, were you someone who was like on the road to insufferable, like as in like sitting with someone and like, you know, describing it the whole time, you know, like the person who talks all through the movie or the person who does, you know what I mean?
I do that with my husband. I'm like, that's like, the guy from Baywatch.
Right. So were you very analytical? Like, was it hard to break out of the analytical thing and just enjoy?
It is a conscious effort. It does take energy to kind of switch it off. It's like when you're watching, for example, like an M. Night Shyamalan movie, you're thinking, what's the twist going to be? And it's just, it's letting it wash over you. And it's easier when I go to the theater, I'm super into the dialogue and the story, because most of the time that's all you have. Mm-hmm. And letting yourself get immersed in that and the characters and stuff, and letting it drag you in. But yeah, it's easier sometimes than others. So when you're not totally enraptured by the performances or the writing or whatever, it does come a bit of a chore. I've never walked out of a show. I will say that. I saw hundreds of shows and I never walked out of one. I think impressive. I probably wanted to, but only a couple of times. There's always something redeeming to find, right?
Yeah. It may be minute, but...
Yeah. The exits were well lit. the chairs were comfortable.
Did you ever include that in a review?
You know, I should have. That could have been my sign for I didn't enjoy this.
Yeah, it's kind of like some shade right there, right?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Before you started your project, would you tend to be a whole novel reader, short story reader, like, or just all of the above? Like, it's all good, like a buffet.
Do you know, I read short story collections, and I read them what I think are probably wrong now that I've got experience of them. I would read through them as if they were a novel. Like, with a lot of novels, it usually takes me a couple of days to read them because I just keep going and going and going. But with a short story collection, I think it's good to finish a story and take time to step away from it and reflect on it before you go into the next one. Mm-hmm. But before I started this thing, I would run through a whole collection and bounce from one story to the next and I would end up not enjoying some of them because I didn't give myself time to reflect on each of the situations. So there are some collections that I would like to revisit that I read like that. But I would say that I was more a novel person before this whole thing started.
How did this whole thing start?
That's a great question. So it was April 2018. I had just moved to Torrance in LA County, where I live now. I was new to the area. I did not like my job. I am a parent, so all the pressures that come with that. So I thought, what aspect of my life can I have a little bit of control over? Mm-hmm. What can I dedicate in my day that is mine, that I enjoy, and that I'm going to stick to? And I thought, you know what? Short stories. I have plenty of books. I have access to some of the best libraries in the world.
Yes.
Let's try. Let's see how it goes. And we're still here 4 years later. Uh-huh. Reading a short story every day.
Wow. Are you a big proponent of the, like, are you a big user of the library?
Oh god, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Especially I'm very fortunate to have access to the Los Angeles Public Library, which has one of the biggest catalogs in the world, both physically and with ebooks and stuff and audiobooks too. And their Libby app is just gold.
Oh, yes.
Any book that you can think of, any audiobook you can think of, it's just there. And I have always lived near libraries. Wherever I go, I have a library card. I've lived all over the place. I've still got a Manchester library card from the UK. I haven't lived there for a very long time and not taken it away from me. I think they're the most beautiful thing in the world. I just My daughter loves the library too. It's just, I just think it's just so important, and it's free.
Yes. I'm maybe a little bit of hyperbole, but like the world's greatest invention. Like, I mean,
yeah. And I've heard you say it on episodes before, but it's true. And I think, especially with, like I said, the Libby app and all the kind of resources that local libraries, especially in the States, offer, mm-hmm. it's just unbelievable what you can get. When I lived in Livermore in Northern California, I was a volunteer at the library,
nice.
Teaching a Korean lady how to speak English through the library.
Cool.
I absolutely loved that. But that was a service that the library offered to people who wanted to learn English mm-hmm. for free.
Mm-hmm.
And they just ran off volunteers, and it was so popular.
Yes.
But I think the challenge with the library is like, how do you promote that? How do you promote your services to a wider audience?
Yeah.
It costs a lot of money.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, I was just down in SoCal for around Christmas, and I had some grading to do to finish up for the semester.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I was trying to find a library that was open. I think I went on the day before or after Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
The Cerritos Library. If you ever get to Cerritos, mm-hmm. unbelievable.
I've never been to that one.
Just like, just gorgeous architecture.
Oh, great.
And like, just, I mean, two floors, maybe three floors.
Perfect.
For me, it's got to have that comfortable chair, right? Where you sit.
Yes, like, definitely. You know,
and, yep. you know, set up the computer or set up the books. And it's like, yeah, Cerritos Library was like, I was so impressed.
Oh, so good. It was kind of, the library in Livermore was kind of a sanctuary for me when I first moved mm-hmm. there, because I moved to the mm-hmm. States with my husband. He works in tech. But I could not work for the first year or so that we moved here. So I volunteered, but we were literally across the street from a library, and I would be in there pretty much every day just grabbing a book or a graphic mm-hmm. novel, sitting down and just doing my thing because I could, and it was free.
amazing. Kindle, are you a Kindle fan?
I am.
Whatever? Yeah.
Yeah, and Amazon is evil, but it's also very convenient.
Yes, I know.
And I'm one of those people that if a book is $2 and I've heard that it's good, I'll buy it. I have a backlog of books on my Kindle that is just ridiculous, but I'll just get them because they're cheap. But I'm also a physical book reader too. There are a lot of books that you can't get on Kindle, yeah. and especially because I still keep in tune with the kind of British literature, and some of the books that get published in the UK don't get published over here, so it's the only way that I can get them sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I always get my books legally. I never Sorry, download them illegally.
So you don't discriminate. Yeah. You don't discriminate. Kindle.
However I can consume my books is a wonderful thing, but I don't read on my phone. I can't read on my phone.
Okay. Yeah. I hear you. Are you, so since 2018, we're, I guess, coming to close to 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, are we talking like 98% of the days, like 99.7, like pretty dang close to every day?
Well, it's so funny because I was kind of looking at my end of year report for 2020, the first year of the pandemic. I read almost 500 stories.
Wow.
Because I could.
Sure.
Because I have more time. But yeah, it's about every day. And then if I get a really good collection, like I'll read two a day, I'll cheat. It's funny. For this year, I missed a couple of days because I got into a really good novel. You'll find that you follow my spreadsheet, there will be 3 day periods where nothing happens because I've found an especially good novel that I want to really get through. And that happened this week.
What's the novel?
It's called Tell Me I'm Worthless by Alison Rumfitt. She is a British writer. This is a horror novel. There are some trans characters in there. It's very, very clever, very British. Mm-hmm. It's terrifying. Hmm. Lots of Shirley Jackson influences in there. It was loaned to me by two of my wonderful friends who knew nothing about the book, and then brought it to my house. And I was like, thank you. I've heard about this.
Cool.
Highly recommended. Highly recommended for fans of Shirley Jackson and any kind of horror.
Nice. So, do you find yourself reading the story like the same time every day, or doesn't necessarily matter? Like, do you try to keep yourself to a routine?
I tend to do it just before I go to sleep.
Okay.
It has varied with the pandemic and stuff because my schedule's all over the place. I have a regular job during the day. Mm. So yeah, it tends to be my daughter's in bed. I'm gonna go have my dinner, get some sleep, and right. I have my Kindle or I have my towering pile of books, and depending on the mood or depending on whether I'm in reading a collection that I really dig, at the moment I am reading Valancourt's latest collection of world horror stories. They translate horror stories from around the world for the first time into English and make a beautiful compilation of unknown stories in the second version, and I'm digging that one at the moment.
I got this, I want to say, from your website. It's talking about kind of like the draw of the short story. I love them all. I love novels. I think poetry is maybe, I mean, for a lot of people, maybe it's harder. I mean, I love poetry as well. We can talk about the short story, whether it's Gone Away or, you know, I know it doesn't sell as well, like, collection than a novel for, you know, reasons that make sense, but it's also, you know, they're also bite sized. It's also kind of goes really well with like the technology of today, right? Like, you can read one in 10 minutes, 22 minutes versus, you know, but anyway, sorry, the quote from your website is, quote, novels sell way better than short story collections, which is why we should have a biased short story collection day. Few things are better than a gorgeously crafted short story.
Yeah, I think that was a retweet of
exactly, yes.
Forgive me, I don't know who it was, but yeah, I think short stories are criminally underrated because people don't tend to read them for some reason. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what that is. I was speaking earlier. When I was young, I had an incredibly positive first introduction to a short story. And I know in the States, a lot of people read The Lottery by Shirley Jackson in high school, right? And it's an old story, so a lot of people have heard it. Mm-hmm. And to me, I guess it's kind of, you either love it or you hate it with The Lottery. I love it. Everybody I love loves it because it's weird and it's terrifying. But it's not for everyone. And I know that might discourage some people if they think that's what it is.
Well, I was going to talk about The Lottery later, but let's get into it. And first of all, I love your phrasing. I love how you said it's criminally underrated. That's very true. The short story is criminally underrated. So I have a great colleague who started teaching with me a couple years ago. We're both teaching the same class. We're both teaching world literature. Mm-hmm. And she's like, for this unit, we're going to teach The Lottery by Shirley Jackson. I'm like, oh, cool. You know, cause I totally remembered it from when I read it in high school. Mm-hmm. And then maybe like a day or so before, I'm like, oh, I better reread it just to be sure. I had not read it before. I was totally, for whatever random reason, I don't know if you know the story by, I want to say D.H. Lawrence, the Rocking Horse winner.
Oh, no, I haven't read that one. I can add that to my list.
And I believe British. Is it D.H. Lawrence? I'll look it up in a minute. But, you know, it's kind of a classic story. It's one of those in the anthology. It's a great story, but it's not The Lottery. It had to do with money and all this. That's for some reason why I said that. So I read The Lottery, and it was a visceral experience. It was like, oh, my. So that's why they were piling up the rocks. Oh, and like, right. I mean, there's a reason The Lottery is a classic.
It's so good.
And so I enjoyed the heck out of teaching it.
I bet. Yeah.
I mean, incredible piece. It went really well with the unit we were doing and everything like that. So
cool.
Tell me a little bit about your love of Shirley Jackson and The Lottery. And
she's so good. I think it's difficult to read The Lottery and not be completely hypnotized by it. Mm-hmm. I tend to shove it in people's faces and say, hey, if you read this. Yeah. She was just ahead of her time. She was Stephen King before Stephen King. Mm. And because I don't know, this is just a theory. I think because maybe she was a woman that people underestimated her. I mean, there's some great autobiographies of Shirley Jackson, but the mess that surrounded when that story got published in the New Yorker, people thought it was real. Mm-hmm. And I can't imagine where she pulled that from. Where the heck do you pull that story from? Yeah. And she just writes so beautifully. You don't expect something so spoiler alert, so horrifying to happen. She just, the word that I hear a lot when I hear about Shirley Jackson is like uncanny and a sense of unease that like, you know, something is wrong. You hope something isn't wrong, but then something does go wrong and it's terrifying. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think My Lottery was the introduction to Shirley Jackson. Then I read her novel, We Have Always Lived in the Castle, which is her last novel, unfortunately, okay. which I think was recommended by Neil Gaiman. Wow. That was around 10 years ago. And then it was a case of, oh, we need to read some more Shirley Jackson. So I am still working my way through her novels because I'm aware I only have a finite number and I want to eke them out as long as possible. But the Haunting of Hill House is wonderful.
Yes.
And the TV adaptation was not an adaptation. It was inspired by, but that was great too.
Okay.
And The Sundial is another novel of hers, which is absolutely hilarious. It's about a family cooped up in a house at the end of the world. And yeah, they do interesting things to each other. But the thing that comes across in that book, probably the best that I've read, is her sense of humor. Shirley Jackson was hilarious. And I just read her, they published last year, some of her personal correspondence to her parents, to her publisher, to her agent, to her family. And the thing that comes across in those letters is just, she was a really funny girl. She was a really funny lady and such an eloquent writer and such a loss. Yes. But the thing that came across in the book of her letters and in her autobiographies too is her lack of confidence.
Oh, wow.
And just her husband wasn't entirely supportive. I think there was an element of jealousy there, but he was a really successful writer too. But just what she could have achieved had she known how good she was. Yeah, just, I mean, even surpasses what she's already done.
I mean, if she doesn't have confidence, then who would, you know?
Yeah.
Ability.
And it was a different time, and as a woman I can imagine, yeah, you know, there were certain expectations placed on her to be a certain way of being a housewife and supporting her husband and stuff, and for her to just say, no, I'm good at this and I'm gonna keep doing it, but still having that question in the back of her head is it's kind of devastating. But she left some beautiful work.
Yes. Yeah, I had my students, I mean, well, maybe some of them just told me they were doing it, and I mean, hopefully they did, but I was like, hey, let's all read it, you know, now that we know the incredible ending and the twist and the O. Henry and all that, let's read it again, you know, let's talk about how we're going to read it differently this time, what we see differently, like, oh, this means something more. And, you know, so, but yeah, I mean, just on a craft basis, it's like, wow.
And there is the stories that can do that to you, that successfully plant those seeds. And then you come back around to the end and you think, how did they do that?
Yeah,
it's like, some short stories are like that. They're like a magic trick, and they go along, and you're thinking, okay, this is cool. What's going on? And then you turn the page, and the world just goes, poof, and you step away. And this has happened to me 3 times, and one of those is The Lottery, where you remember where you were when you read it, and your world just shifts, and like, this is what one person can do with words in like 4 or 5 pages.
Right. So
it's unbelievable.
So what are 2 and 3?
So another one is called The Old Man, and that's by Daphne du Maurier, who wrote Rebecca.
All right.
Her short stories are wonderful. So she wrote the short story of The Birds, the Alfred Hitchcock movie. And she also wrote the short story of Don't Look Now, which was also made into a movie with Donald Sutherland, I think.
Sounds familiar. Okay.
It's got the little guy with the red coat. It's very creepy. But her short stories are really unsettling. But yeah, The Old Man, it's about a man watching a family kind of play with each other, but something's not quite right. And I won't give away the ending because it's an absolutely beautiful ending. Yeah, yeah. But I remember I was in Livermore Library when I read that, and I was just like, oh God. And the third one is by an author called Samantha Schweblin, who I think she's Spanish, but she had a collection out a couple of years ago called A Mouthful of Birds. And the story is called On Step, and it's about a family who are trying to adopt a child through very strange means. And that's all I'll say. But it's another 5 or 6 pager, and at the end you're like, oh God, this is crazy. All by women too.
Right, 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 right. What did Beyonce say? Who runs the world?
That's it.
You know? Who runs the literary world? Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell me, so, you know, looking at your list, looking at your spreadsheet, which again, I'll share, but it's like so cool. You have like, you know, you have comments, and sometimes it's like, sometimes they're, you know, maybe not PG rated, but
I'm a Brit. Swearing is cultural.
There you go. they're sometimes they're really short and sometimes they're more, mm-hmm. you know. And one of them you wrote was the quote, the saddest short story ever written.
Ah, oh, yes.
Without maybe giving away details, what would that be? And giving away the ending or whatever, but what made it so sad?
I think it's called The Music Box. It's by Malachi Whitaker. I'm going to have to find it now. That's the one. So Malachi Whitaker is a lady. Her name is Marjorie Whitaker. She is dead now. She died a while ago. There is a publishing company in London called Persephone, and they do, they bring back forgotten works by female writers early 20th century. And it's fantastic. They have two volumes of short stories, and this set of short story in the world was in that volume. And it's about a mother and a son who live with a kind of overbearing, abusive father. Mm. And they try and find a little bit of joy by buying a music box. And the father does not like that. And I would recommend it to everyone who can get their hands on it, but it's just so unbelievably sad.
Oh, gosh.
I'm not a big crier. I used to be, but I'm not a big crier, but wow, but it's beautifully written. It's another beautifully written story, but it's absolutely heartbreaking. So if that's your jam, check that one out.
So be prepared. In other words, you're going to feel some things. You're going to have a tip.
Yes. And if you don't feel some things, you maybe want to ask yourself some questions.
Yeah. again, you've read such a wide variety. Is there a certain genre that you flock to? Do you flock to horror? Do you flock to sci-fi? Or just all the above?
Yeah, it changes. When I first started, I still do a lot of horror, a lot of sci-fi, kind of older stories like Richard Matheson, like people who used to write for the Twilight Zone.
Okay.
Because I love those little stories, like Theodore Sturgeon is another one. But as I'm getting older, I'm not that old. I kind of like stories about normal lives, about especially working class women, and their internal monologue, for lack of a better word, and just kind of finding beauty in regular situations. And I think maybe that has something to do with the pandemic too, because we're kind of limited to how we can get our joy now. Literally. So, you know, we have a lot of fear and horror going on in the real world. I think it's kind of softened my reading tastes a little. Mm-hmm. But don't get me wrong, I do love horror, and I do find a kind of odd escapism in horror. It's kind of comforting in a way that, you know, I know it's fiction. Yeah. But yeah, my tastes have developed, but it's only been 4 years, and I'm conscious that there are a lot more stories out there, even on my own Kindle, on my own bookcase, that I still need to get to.
Are there days where you're just like, I can't do it today, but you like force yourself?
No. And I think I used to, I go easier on myself now, because I'm not really doing this for anybody other than myself and my own enjoyment. I mean, I don't know who looks at my spreadsheet or who follows this. Mm-hmm. So I just, most of the time I write notes just so I don't forget, because as I get older, my memory isn't what it was. But I will go back sometimes and read a story and think, I've read this before. And I'll look at my spreadsheet and be like, oh yeah, I read this a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
But yeah, and I'm the same with novels too. I don't feel any guilt about putting books down if I don't enjoy them now. You know, time is limited, and there are very few stories that I've not finished.
Yeah.
I can only think of one right now.
Wow.
And it was very long. And I was just like, when is this going to end? Okay, I give up. It's fine.
Yeah.
And it's funny, because it's by a writer called Graham Joyce, who's unfortunately not with us anymore, but his novels are wonderful. I love his novels.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it doesn't necessarily, just because you're a good writer of novels, I think it's a completely different talent to write short stories. And some writers can do it and some cannot. And that's
totally,
that's fine.
Yeah. I love the idea that you're talking about, like, basically like your self-care is like reading.
It completely is. And so cool. I talk about this because I find it hard to meditate because my brain is very loud. And I think, you know, one of the basics of meditation is just being able to focus and shut everything else out. And when I'm reading, I feel like I can do that because I can focus on the thing that I'm reading at the time, especially if it's good.
Right.
But yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think it's an easy form of self-care too, because I have access to so many books that I can just, you know, take a minute and just start reading. And then 5 minutes later, get back to whatever it is I was doing.
Right. One of the authors that I saw a lot of on your spreadsheet is George Saunders.
Yeah, I read one of his collections a couple of years ago. He was recommended to me by a friend at work called Julie. You may have noticed this. I don't read an awful lot of male writers.
Right.
And it's not, it is kind of a choice. I prefer, I just prefer female writers. I think they are masters of this form as far as I'm aware. But I think this year I'm probably going to try and rope some more male writers back in, because I don't want to be a misandrist.
George Saunders is one of those, like, everyone's like, you need to read him. I know he's widely acclaimed. Was he your jam? Or,
you know, there was one story and the collection I read, I'll probably say it wrong, is it Pastoralia, is that how you say it?
Sounds
about right. The title story of that was really good. It was about a couple of people who were basically a living exhibit in a museum. And that it was really interesting concept. But to be honest with you, looking back at the stories, that my recaps of the stories that I read, I don't remember too much about them.
Sure.
And that's probably me. I probably didn't get it. But I know what I like, and I tend to stick to that. But yeah, if any of your listeners have any George Saunders particular recommendations, then I would be happy to check them out.
Shout out a couple of writers. Who are some, like, you know, eccentric, quirky, weird?
Oh, here we go. You know,
yeah.
I do have a list. Who do I love? Oh, gosh. Okay. Daphne du Maurier, like I said earlier, she's obviously not alive anymore, but I think her short stories are really underrated, because Rebecca is a incredibly respected novel. Her short stories are so creepy and worth your time. Camilla Grudova had a wonderful collection a few years ago called The Doll's Alphabet, and she has not published anything since, apart from a couple of stories in literary journals. Her story Waxy was the first story I ever read for my project, and she's kind of weird feminist, quirky, creepy tales, and yeah, she's wonderful. I highly recommend checking her out. Karen Tidbeck, she's more kind of the sci-fi side of things. Her collection Jagannath is absolutely wonderful. Elizabeth Hand has so many short stories. I think they're all wonderful. Who else do we have? Julia Armfield, she has a wonderful novel coming out next year, but she has a collection called Salt Slow. She's a British writer.
Okay.
That I'd highly recommend. Leonora Carrington is an older one that I would highly recommend. She's kind of, she was a surrealist artist, but she wrote short stories too. They're just bonkers. Yeah, there are so many wonderful writers out there, but like we were saying earlier, if you write a short story collection, it's easy to fly under the radar.
Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely. Have you read Louise Erdrich?
She is another one that's been recommended to me that I've not had a chance to check out yet. What should I read of hers?
I know her more by the stories than the collections. She has one called The Red Convertible, which is again been anthologized. I've taught it. I remember reading it as a student. But she's, I want to say, I mean, she's gotten a huge awards. Maybe Pulitzer Prize even. I mean,
she did like last year. Yeah.
Right. And then how about Antonia Nelson?
Oh, no, there's another one.
I'm pretty easy to remember. The name of the collection is In the Land of Men.
Fantastic.
And that's the main story, which is one of those chilling in a great way, is called In the Land of Men. It's the first story of the collection.
Fantastic.
She's, I want to say, like in the Southwest, like I think New Mexico now.
Cool. And this is the good thing about me moving over to the States, because I still consider myself quite new, even though I've lived here for 7 years. Right. Like there are a lot of writers that I've yet to experience, because they're not really popular or known in Britain where I grew up. So I get to discover all these writers that are considered kind of classics out here that I've just never heard of.
Exactly.
which is wonderful because it's like I get a second awakening of all these fantastic writers.
Oh, that is cool. Are you big on, are you into like Goodreads and there's the one I used to be on. I can't remember the name, but are you like, you know, are you the one like with the Amazon reviews and Goodreads and all that? What do you think of like kind of like that review culture?
Yeah, I mean, I am on Goodreads. I do like Goodreads. I've been on it for a few years now. I can understand why people don't like it. Like we were talking about earlier, there's a lot of negativity on there.
Sure.
I try not to be like that because, like I said, if I don't like a book, I don't finish it, and I tend to not put it on my Goodreads. I don't review too many things. I'm privileged that I have access to a website called NetGalley, and they send out like advanced reading copies of books that are coming out in the next year or so. So I get a lot of those in exchange for reviews, but I select the books that I want, and I've read some wonderful books.
Yeah.
And I review those because I want people to keep sending me books. But if I'm reading something for fun, I don't usually review it at any great length because I want to enjoy it without thinking, okay, how am I going to summarize this plot? How am I going to articulate my feelings about this book? I just want to read it, unless it's absolutely incredible and I feel like I have to tell people about it. Like the one that I just read that I was talking about earlier, Tell Me I'm Worthless. I think I probably just put, oh, bleep, this book is amazing.
Yes. Sometimes those are the best reviews, right?
Yeah, that's it. And normally the books that I read are personal recommendations. Like I'll just see some random person on Twitter saying, holy cow, I read this book and it changed my life. Yeah. And I'll read the synopsis and be like, yes, I will read that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I love the personal recommendations.
That's it. And I don't even have to know the person, but I, on Goodreads, I've kind of met people that have a similar taste to me, and they've shared recommendations. So I've only experienced the good side of Goodreads, but I am not an author. I think my reviews are fair. They may not always be well written, but they're always fair. like I said earlier, I don't really see the value in tearing anyone down and ganging up on people. The world is tough enough. I don't want to contribute to that.
That's for sure. One of the things I want to get back into is more of like the literary journals. Do you read literary journals like for the short stories or not necessarily?
Yeah, there's a few horror ones. I read Nightmare. There's one called Bob and Pen, which I subscribe to on Patreon, which is really good. Fire, FIYAH, which is black science fiction writers. And I've not actually read my first issue yet. I need to get on that. But there are so many out there. And a lot of them, you can read the stories for free online. Like Uncanny is another one that I subscribe to, but they make their stories available for free on their podcast and on their website. So you can find good short stories anywhere. I mean, I don't tend to spend an awful long time reading literary journals. I usually use them for recommendations. But there are a lot of them out there, and they're really cheap to subscribe to some of them. Yes. There'll be like a couple of dollars on Patreon and you'll get, you know, six stories every month. But some of them will be good, some of them will be bad. But I think it's worth supporting magazines like that because it's important that they keep going. Because a lot of writers will get their first story published through those, and then they'll grow and be absolutely amazing writers, but they just need that first step.
Do you get any hard copy journals, or is it all online?
Oh, it's all online. Yeah, I just limited on space.
sure. Yeah. So I wonder what's coming up for 2022. You know, definitely a good chance for you to shout out, you know, your website and kind of what you're working on. Like, I mean, do you have, like you said, it's for you and that's what it's all about. Like, do you have plans like, oh, maybe you can like, you know, like a book club or anything like that? Like kind of like, what's your future project? I mean, am I going to be talking to you in 10 years and you still got the short story a day going? Like, what are you thinking?
I mean, the dream would be to get, you know, a group of my favorite working writers now and put out an anthology of new work. That would be, I am under no illusions on how difficult that is. And it would be a lot of work. And like I said, I do have a regular day job and a daughter. So that would be the goal, because there are so many writers working now that I just...
Somebody give Tracy a fellowship.
Please. Yes. And I do love telling people about these short story writers, and but you know, my voice is only so loud. But you know, contributing through things like Goodreads and NetGalley and Twitter and all that good stuff is all that I can do, and just let people know that short stories are absolutely amazing. And like you said, they take 10 minutes to read, and then you go away and think about them, mm-hmm. and your life could be, you know, if it's a good one, your life could be changed for the better or the worse, yes. depending on how it is.
Yes.
But I think there's a real skill to creating a world, believable characters within a certain number of pages, and just like the lottery, just punching you at the end and just establishing something so quickly and just leave you walking away going, wow, they did that in like a couple of thousand words. That is unbelievable. What? It's a magic trick. I couldn't do it. I don't even know how you would begin.
Well, yeah, I mean, fewer words, like it's more difficult to make them powerful, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I love Stephen King, but I have never read it. I've tried. Huh. It's like this thick, sure. But his short stories are absolutely amazing, and they're not short by any stretch of the imagination.
Not at all. No. It's like, you know, I took like a children's writing course in college, and
oh, cool.
I didn't think it would be easy, but I thought it'd be easier, but no, right? Fewer words, you know, make them more powerful, and you know, like the craft and the structure. And mm-hmm. I'm thinking of a couple books that I absolutely love, but mm-hmm. there might be a couple throwaway pages even, you know what I mean? Like,
Yeah. You've got to make every word count. It's, uh-huh. It's tough. And I think that coming back to theater too, when you've got to hold somebody's, attention, and all you have is this little space, those words have got to count. They've got to keep that audience member from looking around or looking at their mm-hmm. phone or looking at their watch or whatever. So you've got to grab them. And yeah. I think the best writers do that, and they bring you in, and it's magic. It's absolutely magic.
Yeah. Well, I hope that, you know, in publishing this, this episode and getting your information out there, you know, more people can continue to follow your quest, and, you know, we're out there, right? I think a lot of us are out there. We got to kind of like put our heads up and like, look around, like you, like, the big time fanatics about short stories, we're out there. Mm-hmm. And I think it's so cool that you've, you know, put your effort towards doing this. So thanks so much for talking to me. It's been so cool to get into your mindset. Thank you.
No, thank you. This has been absolutely wonderful. Yeah. And if anybody wants to know where to start with short stories, or if they want to do something similar, or just they know they like a certain style of writing, I'm more than happy to give recommendations. As you can see, I've read an awful lot of short stories. I got a lot of ammo to pull from. Right. So, and I'm always happy to talk about short stories on social media.
No doubt. I know you're on Twitter.
I sure am.
I remember having trouble finding you repeatedly, just because, you know, the a lot of Tracy Thompson is fairly common. Do you know the, I mean, I'll put it on the episode notes, but do you remember off the top of your head your, what your Twitter handle would be?
Sure. It's Tracy Ann Thompson. So that's TracyAnnThomp.
Okay. And then are you on any other social media?
I think I've got the same username for Instagram. Okay. I'm on Goodreads. You can find me on Goodreads. Mm-hmm. Just search for Tracy Thompson. Not on Facebook. I don't like it.
smart.
Goodreads and Twitter are my usual places where I'll be talking about writing and reading. So yeah, you can find me on there.
Awesome. And you know, in my little corner of the world, I'll be sure to spread the word about the website and the spreadsheet.
Thank you.
You know, thanks again so much. Maybe we'll talk again when it's been 10 years or 15 years or whatever.
Oh my gosh, can you imagine? And we're still in the pandemic.
Oh no. Yeah, exactly. Let's hope that that's not the case, but that you'll be, you know, finding time in other ways, because we'll be back to the regular world as it is.
I sure hope so. Absolutely.
Thanks so much for giving of your time. What are you reading tonight?
What am I reading tonight? I got some book mail today. There's a book called O Caledonia, which I'm going to tell you who it's by, that has been recently republished. Someone compared it to Shirley Jackson's We Have Always Lived in the Castle. I know. It's called O Caledonia by Elspeth Parker. A gothic coming of age novel set in a drafty, crumbling castle in the wilds of northern Scotland. Ooh.
Nice. You have another career as like a voiceover person.
Oh, thank you. So I think I'm going to start that one tonight. It's pretty old, but yeah, it's being republished. So that's next on my list. What are you reading right now?
I'm reading a lot of things like with my class. I'm reading The Great Gatsby.
Oh, cool. Okay.
For the second or third time.
I was gonna say they love that one over here, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely. I'm looking to do some different things with it. There's the copyright ran out on it maybe like a year or two ago.
Yeah, I heard.
And there's been some, like, you know, I mean, women are given pretty short shrift in the book, to be, you know, to put it lightly. And there's there's been a couple. University of Iowa, the MFA program, did a at least one like rewriting of it, or I guess rewriting of it, like, you know, with more people of color,
oh,
more
great.
Women. It's kind of a cool update. So I'm like, I'm looking about how I can get that in there for the podcast. Matt Bell has a book called Appleseed.
I've heard nothing but great things about that book.
Oh man, I just got it from the library. I just got it from the library yesterday. I have not started it yet.
Okay.
But you know, talk to me in about a week or so. So I'm looking forward to talking to him. And yeah, the book is, you know, climate change. I mean, it's very, very topical. So I'm really looking forward to reading that. But yeah, like you said, I've heard nothing but good things.
Yeah, I've heard great things about that. Yeah. It's a little too close to home in terms of climate change, but you know what? Yeah. We can't let it stop us reading those awesome books.
We're reading it while the ship goes down, right?
Exactly. Yeah, that sounds good.
Well, continue good luck with your reading quest. And again, thanks so much for joining me. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Of course. Thank you, Pete. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you for listening to episode 103 with Tracy Thompson. You can now subscribe to the podcast, The Chills Will Podcast, on Apple Podcasts. Please leave a 5-star review. You can also ask for it by name using Alexa. Find it on Stitcher, Spotify, and maybe giving money to that Jeff Bezos guy's Amazon Music, but try to avoid that. Follow me on Instagram, where I'm at Chills at Will Podcast, or on Twitter, where I'm at Chills at Will PO1, the number one. You can watch other episodes and this episode on YouTube. Watch and subscribe to the Chills at Will Podcast channel. Please subscribe to the channel and the podcast while you're checking out this great episode. This is a passion project of mine, a DIY operation, and I'd love for your help in promoting what I'm convinced is a unique and spirited look at an often ignored art form. The intro song for the Chills of Will podcast is Wind Down Instrumental, and the other song played on the episode is Hoops Instrumental by Matt Whitehour. Both songs are used through archesaudio.com. Please tune in for the next episode, episode 104, with the aforementioned Matt Bell. Matt Bell is the author most recently of the novel Appleseed, which is a New York Times notable book, published by Custom House in July 2021. His craft book, Refused to be Done, A Guide to Novel Writing, Rewriting, and Revision, will follow in early 2022 from Soho Press. He's the author of the novel Scrapper and In the House Upon the Dirt Between the Lake and the Woods, as well as the short story collection A Tree or a Person or a Wall, and several other titles. A native of Michigan, he teaches creative writing at Arizona State University. The episode with Matt will air on February 15th. For now, thanks again for listening. I hope that these quarantine days bring you texts by writers with mad skills, and that, like super reader Tracy Thompson, you seek out works that give you chills at will. Thank you.